What drove a 17-year-old girl to commit murder? Dr. Ross Reeves hated that he had to visit the worst section of Chicago's uptown neighborhood to find out. A wafer-thin hooker with rotting teeth eyed him the moment he stepped onto the platform. He hurried in the opposite direction, but the woman's high-heeled steps clapped against the concrete as she struggled to catch up with him.
"Excuse me, sir, I think you dropped something."
Ross didn't acknowledge the obvious attempt at engaging him.
"Sir, you looking for a date?"
"No, thank you."
"Are you sure?"
"Yes, I'm positive." He walked faster. A row of androgynous homeless slept along the stairway, adding to the thick smell of urine that had him holding his breath. A man wearing at least 4 layers of soiled clothing approached Ross and extended a tattered, gloved hand.
"Spare some change?"
"I'm sorry," Ross said. "I don't have any change."
"Man, 25 cents gets me a 40.
Skilled after over a decade of living in Chicago in the art of outmaneuvering panhandlers, Ross moved faster. When he offered no further acknowledgement, the homeless man moved on to another mark.
"Can you spare some change?"
Ross heard the man say again.
"Get lost,"
someone answered. Ross checked over his shoulder for the hooker, who had seemingly vanished. He picked up a rag and started wiping grease off of his fingers, gaze still fixed on her. Sophie stopped a couple of feet in front of him.
"Do you have a minute, Calder?"
she asked softly, trying not to sound emotional or put out, even if she did kind of want to claw his eyes out.
"I was expecting you sooner than this," he said.
"I needed some time to calm down," she answered. "Look, I know you don't want neighbors, but I swear I'm quiet. I'll keep my goats away from you, and you'll never even know I'm here." He didn't say anything, just watched her with that hard look in his eyes. "We can work out some kind of payment thing. I mean, you paid a lot for it, and it'll take time, but I swear I'll pay it. I'll get another job, or..." He held his hand up. "Stop." "Please," she said quietly, looking into his eyes. He looked away, shook his head.
"You're the only neighbor I have. I get you out of the way. I've got 100 solid acres that are all mine."
"Calder, that house has been in my family for over 200 years. I need it. It's the first place I've ever felt belong to me. Please," she said again, and hated the desperate note that had crept into her voice.
Grief tastes like acid rain. So I think in my black dress, standing graveside at the head of a crowd of mourners. As the downpour beats against the umbrella held over my pinned-up hair by a relative whose name I don't remember. Mom, with a hand on my shoulder, sobs at the lowering of the casket into a grave so deep, the brown oak disappears from view not halfway down. Into the shadows. And the flowers, placed so carefully atop the casket, slide off into the void, doomed to be crushed. The Reverend Joseph speaks in reverent tones of the body in the wooden box that used to be a man. A man beloved by everyone, except me, his own daughter, who only ever knew him from blurry pictures taken worlds away. Sure, I know his face, name, occupation. I know the promise to return he never fulfilled. I know of his great deeds, too. But I don't know enough to love the guy, or even the idea of him. And it stumps me how so many others can. People who know less than I do.